What kind of programs does this school have? How are the test scores? How many kids do a classroom? Homes.com knows these are all things you ask when you're home shopping as a parent. That's why each listing on Homes.com includes extensive reports on local schools, including photos, parent reviews, test scores, student-teacher ratio, school rankings, and more. The information is from multiple trusted sources and curated by Homes.com's dedicated in-house research team. It's all so you can make the right decision for your family. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
Every week on the Moth Podcast, we share stories that are funny, strange, heartbreaking, and above all, true.
I myself have been married for 56 years. Unfortunately, to four different women.
It turns out the people I was looking for all my life is what you people would call nerds.
Follow and listen to The Moth on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Takes a shot, runs into the box, shot, score!
It's time for Atlanta Soccer Tonight.
Tune in as Jason Longshore gives you insight and analysis on the beautiful game, including headlines from around the world of soccer.
Rebound, score!
This is Atlanta Soccer Tonight, brought to you by your local Ford dealer and Firehouse Subs. Enjoy more subs, save more lives.
Atlanta Soccer Tonight is on Sports Radio 92.9, The Game. Here's Jason Longshore.
Let's kick it. Atlanta Soccer Tonight is live on 92.9, The Game and the Odyssey app. I'm Jason Longshore. Welcome to our weekly show where we cover soccer in Atlanta, in Georgia, in the Southeast, in the United States, in this hemisphere. On the planet, it's what we do. It's Atlanta Soccer Tonight. Lots of stuff to talk about in this episode. We're going to talk Club World Cup. We know one finalist. We will find out the other one tomorrow. The games in Atlanta have concluded. We'll give you some thoughts on that and kind of some takeaways from the tournament with two games left to play. We'll talk about Atlanta United, who head to Toronto over the weekend. Not a fun one at Washington, D.C. last weekend. Not a whole lot of offense to talk about. We'll try to see what positives we can find in it and talk about some things that we noticed and see what maybe we can delineate from what's to come this weekend as Atlanta goes to face Toronto. But let's start with the U.S. men's national team. The Gold Cup final was Sunday night, and this has been kind of an all-over-the-map summer for Maurizio Pochettino and the U.S. men's national team. Two bad friendlies ahead of the tournament, two losses, and the second one was very bad in Nashville. That completely diminished the expectations for the Gold Cup and for the team in the Gold Cup. It didn't diminish the TV ratings, by the way. They were really, really good throughout the tournament. The final was the most-watched game since last summer's finals, with the Euros and with the Copa America. Feels like that was forever ago, doesn't it? But that was only a year ago. So the TV interest was there. The online interest, the hashtag brigade, was very angry, which they typically are no matter what happens with the U.S. men's national team, but exceptionally so, and lots of negativity in the media and everything about it. So it was really a weird climate going into this tournament. Gold Cup sometimes can be a weird climate. The Gold Cup is not the Euros. It's not the Copa America. It's not maybe AFCON, the African Cup of Nations, in terms of interest all over in a continental competition. I think the Gold Cup probably draws as much interest as the Asian Cup, for example. But it's not seen the same way. So I think in the summer where you had the Club World Cup going on, you've got the Women's Euros going on, you've got so many different things happening. Maybe it was a little bit easy for the Gold Cup to fly under the radar in some ways. Again, TV ratings tell you otherwise. But for Maurizio Pochettino, this was the only competitive action his team was going to get between now and the World Cup next year. No World Cup qualifying, only friendlies in four windows before the team comes together for games right before the World Cup next June. So this is it. You got out of the group. You did what you needed to do in the group stage. It was fine. It was good. You survived two knockout games, one against Costa Rica, which is always a battle. That one went to penalties. You came up on the good side of that. You got past the Cinderella story of the tournament, which was Guatemala, which is a really good Guatemalan team, by the way. Darwin Lom, for example, This is a team with a lot of U.S. ties in this Guatemalan team. Darwin Lalm has Georgia ties. He's a Calhoun High School graduate. Great player from Northwest Georgia. The U.S. found a way through that game. They went up 2-0, two early goals. They gave up one late. They had to fight. They did. They got through it. And then they went into the final against Mexico's pretty much first choice group. This was not the first choice U.S. group. Not even close. You had players away at the Club World Cup, which took precedence this summer for players in terms of where they had to be according to contractual obligations. Weston McKennie, Tim Weah, Gio Reyna, even though Gio Reyna barely played, they were at the Club World Cup. Christian Pulisic, I know there's been a lot of conversation about that one. Yunus Musah also did not play in this tournament. You had injuries with Anthony Robinson, Falern Balogun, Sergiño Dest. You were going to be nowhere near full strength if you had Christian Pulisic or not, or Yunus Musah or not, for that matter, because that one kind of got lost in the shuffle somewhere. So I don't know if we ever truly set expectations for this team in this tournament. I think in the Gold Cup in general, even with a diminished roster, the U.S. is expected to get to the final. I think Mexico is expected to get to the final. Are they guaranteed to get to the final? Absolutely not. Are they expected to? Yes. That is your baseline. And the U.S. got there. And they went up in the match 1-0. They conceded. And they gave up a goal on a set piece. They scored on a set piece as well. But they gave up a goal on a set piece and ended up losing 2-1. Narrow loss. Mexico dominated a lot of the game. They were the better team on the night. They pinned the U.S. in. It was tough for the U.S. to play and get out of that. Lots of people are taking things in lots of different directions about that. I think it's about this game where Mexico is the better team and they dominated where the game was being played. I don't think Mauricio Pochettino wants to be a sit back and defend team. I don't think he wants to concede possession on a regular basis. I don't think he wants to do those things. But I also think sometimes those things are going to happen. And it goes back to the conversation that we've had on this show many times, and I've had with many of you about the U.S. men's national team is not a top 10 team in the world. I think they're a top 20 team in the world. They're not a top 10 team in the world. So there's going to be matchups where they are not the team that has more talent on the field than the opponent. Generally, when those matchups occur, the team with more talent dictates the match. Generally. Not always, but generally. And this U.S. team is going to have to deal with that at times. I feel better about their ability to do that after seeing this tournament. I think with this group that we saw this summer, which again, isn't the first choice group, but I think we saw a group that showed fight, that showed grit, that showed some things that frankly we haven't seen enough of over the last maybe 12 months. I know a lot of people have lumped the Copa America and disappointment in that into it. Don't forget, if Tim Weah doesn't get sent off here in Atlanta against Panama, you're probably talking about a very different timeline for the U.S. men's national team because there's a very good chance that Greg Berhalter is still in charge. Yeah, I know. Some people just had a jump scare. I get it. I understand people who had issues with Berhalter getting rehired. I don't know if there was a better choice at that time. Copa America, even though it's kind of unlucky for him that a player makes a bad decision and it ends up costing him his job, but it ended up costing him his job. Chicago Fire are happy about that, by the way. So, I think where you are right now with Mauricio Pochettino, what did we learn this summer? I don't know. I think we learned that there's a few players that were maybe outside the pool that are going to play their way into the pool. I think there were some players who didn't take advantage of this opportunity this summer. I think in terms of where the team is in general, it's in the same place. This is a team that is top 20, probably around 20. So you're going to be an underdog in many knockout games in many different competitions. Just a fact. And you're going to have to play behind the ball in those games. You're going to have to fight. You're going to have to show grit. You're going to have some ability to counter. You're going to have to show these things. That's just the reality of where this team is. That's not going to change dramatically in 12 months. So what can change in 12 months? I think the overall depth chart can change. And there's a couple of positions where how it changes is going to affect the future of this program over this next year going into the World Cup. Goalkeeper is one of them. Matt Turner right now is probably the in pencil number one, but he's got to play at the club level this year. If he doesn't, he can't be the number one. There's no way he can be sharp enough to be that guy. He has to play at the club level. He is on track for a move to Lyon. Lyon might be relegated to the second division in France. We'll find out about that. We'll talk about that in the 3-4-3. Find out about that this week. Who knows where that goes? So the number one potential for the U.S. men's national team in goal is completely in flux because who knows what's going to happen with that club. Okay, so that's one. Patrick Schulte probably would have been the number two. Probably, but he got injured. So he needs to get healthy. I would put him as the number two right now. I would. I think he's shown it with the Columbus Crew that he is that guy. Zach Steffen was probably going to get the Gold Cup when Schulte went down, and then he got hurt. I don't know if he can maintain where he's been with the Colorado Rapids. We're going to find out over the next year. But Zach Steffen will be in that mix. Very good shot stopper. There's some other things about his game that I think are a little frustrating, but very good shot stopper. Matt Freeze ended up getting the opportunity, and ESPN had a depth chart coming into the tournament. He was the fourth goalkeeper. And I thought he made the most of the opportunity. He is probably your number two right now, and maybe your number one because of what he did in this tournament. He did not hurt himself in this tournament. He helped himself. And he's a guy who has been on the rise at New York City over the last year or so. He's really shown a lot. Outside of that, I mean, you're talking about Chris Brady in Chicago. You're talking about Ethan Horvath and at Cardiff City. You're talking about Roman Celentano. Gaga Slonina hasn't developed at all since he went to Chelsea, and I don't know if Enzo Maresca knows what his name is. That's kind of it right now at goalkeeper. Okay, so they've got to figure that part out. Fullbacks, Serginho Dest is your guy on the right, and Anthony Robinson is your guy on the left. Neither one was available this summer. Alex Freeman is climbing the ladder quickly. He, in my opinion, is your number two guy on the right, and he might end up really pushing to change some paradigms between now and then. I think he's got the most potential of anybody that we saw really take good advantage of where things were. I really think he does. I really like what Alex Freeman can be for this U.S. men's national team. He had a good tournament. On the left side, Anthony Robinson, he'll be your guy. Max Arfsten was the guy in this tournament. Arfsten's going to be in the mix. DeJuan Jones is going to be in the mix. John Tolkien's going to be in the mix. Caleb Wiley, potentially. Big year for him ahead on loan at Watford. He's got to stay healthy. Can he climb the left back rankings a little bit? Maybe, perhaps. Center back, we saw Chris Richards and Tim Ream in this tournament. Past that, I don't know. Cameron Carter-Vickers is going to be in that mix. Mark McKenzie is going to be in that mix. Miles Robinson's going to be in that mix. Austin Trusty. Maybe George Campbell, our old friend from Atlanta United now with Montreal. He's been rumored with some moves to Europe. Maybe he can start to change where he sits in that depth chart. He could be one who could climb. There's going to be somebody who shocks us. And center back could be the spot because past Richards and Ream, I'm not really excited about anybody. Defensive midfielder is going to be Tyler Adams. Johnny Cardoso has a big opportunity ahead of him this year. Tanner Tessman is stuck in limbo at Lyon as well. Then you're starting to scramble down to Sean Zawadzki, who I really like. I don't know where he fits positionally in this group, probably in the holding midfield. You've got Weston McKennie who can slot in as a double pivot. Yunus Musah will be in that mix. Malik Tillman had a really good tournament. I think he climbs the ladder. Jack McGlynn didn't really do as much this summer as I thought he might. That was a little bit of a disappointment. Sebastian Berhalter, however, did, and maybe he is the one who comes out of this group with the most that he has gained over the summer, if his name's not Diego Luna, because Diego Luna did that. He was that guy. Where he slots in as a 10 or a winger, I don't know. Does he start when everybody is healthy? I don't know. I think he plays, though, and I think he's in your team, and I think in a lot of ways he's the heartbeat of your team. Diego Luna has become a very important figure who has to be in the group, in my opinion. On the wings, it's Christian Pulisic, it's Tim Weah. Past that, your guess is as good as mine. Luna could play out wide. Alex Zendejas has had some good seasons at Club America in Mexico. Matt Komajevic has played well when he's had limited opportunities. He's done very well at Huracan in Argentina. You've got some guys like Griffin Yao, like Kevin Paredes, like Cade Cowell, who have the opportunity to make strides this year, but will they? I don't know. I don't know if there's somebody who changes that paradigm there. Forward is the other big position, other than goalkeeper, where you need somebody to break out. Valerian Balogun was injured. Ricardo Pepi's been injured. Haji Wright's been injured. Patrick Ajimon, a lot of people got in their feelings about him on social media, which I think was extremely unfair. It was very similar to what happened to Jozy Altidore for long stretches of his U.S. men's national team career. Ajimon is effective. He can be better at times, absolutely. I think he's got the potential to continue to grow and be a better player. But he's also a big center forward who can be effective. He drew two very important fouls in the final against Mexico. One of those turned into the opening goal. Right now, he's the guy by default because he was the guy who was standing up. Damian Downs, with a move to Southampton, could be the guy by the time we get to this stage next year. I think it's wide open at forward between Balogun, Pepi, Ajimon, Wright, Brian White at the Vancouver Whitecaps, Damian Downs, Josh Sargent, maybe Brandon Vasquez, if he can remember how to score goals. He's really struggled since the move to Austin. I think forward is the most wide open spot for this national team right now. I don't know who's going to be the starter in game one in the World Cup next year. I really don't. That's a little bit of a scary situation to be in if you're Mauricio Pochettino. That's the biggest storyline as you look ahead to the next year. Christian Pulisic staying healthy is another massive storyline. What happens at goalkeeper is another massive storyline. And then past the starters, which I feel pretty good about at fullback, at center back, in the midfield, on the wings, who's going to be the guy besides Diego Luna who can impact matches from the bench? I don't know who that is at the moment. Maybe it's Alex Freeman. Maybe it's somebody that we're not necessarily thinking about just yet. It's going to be an interesting 12 months for Mauricio Pochettino and for everybody associated with the U.S. men's national team. It's what happens in the year leading into a World Cup, especially when you're hosting. We'll be talking about it all the way through here on Atlanta Soccer Tonight. But coming up next on the show, we're going to get into Atlanta United. They get ready to head to Toronto for a match on Saturday, which is a desperately needed 3 points. We'll talk about what we learned in D.C. and maybe how they get to that 3 points in Toronto. Coming up next on Atlanta Soccer Tonight on 92.9 The Game and the Odyssey app.
What kind of programs does this school have? How are the test scores? How many kids do a classroom? Homes.com knows these are all things you ask when you're home shopping as a parent. That's why each listing on Homes.com includes extensive reports on local schools, including photos, parent reviews, test scores, student-teacher ratio, school rankings, and more. The information is from multiple trusted sources and curated by Homes.com's dedicated in-house research team. It's all so you can make the right decision for your family. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
Every week on the Moth Podcast, we share stories that are funny, strange, heartbreaking, and above all, true.
I myself have been married for 56 years. Unfortunately, to four different women.
It turns out the people I was looking for all my life is what you people would call nerds.
Follow and listen to The Moth on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
When it comes to the world of soccer, we've got you covered.
This is Atlanta Soccer Tonight with Jason Longshore
on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game.
Welcome back. It's Atlanta Soccer Tonight live on 92.9 The Game and the Odyssey app. I'm Jason Longshore, getting caught up on all the soccer topics to debate right now in the summer. Usually the summer is a little slow, but not when you have Gold Cup. Not when you have all the U.S. men's national team drama. Not when you have the Club World Cup. We'll get caught up on that in the 3-4-3. And not when you have MLS going on and Atlanta United struggling at the moment. Draw on Saturday night for Atlanta at DC United. Two teams that coming into the match, and I'm going through my notes and getting ready for this one. It's two teams that have greatly underperformed their expected goals all season long. It's two teams that have conceded more goals than their expected goals say that they should. It's not a perfect stat, but over a period of, 15-plus games, 16-plus games, getting into 18-plus games, it's a pretty decent metric of where a team is. And when you're scoring less than you should be and you're giving up more than you should be, that is not a recipe for success. And that had been the case over the last four games as well for both teams. Christian Benteke was back healthy. He was able to start in this one. That gives you a boost if you're DC United. thought F. Ryan Morales did a really good job against Christian Benteke. And it wasn't just him. Luis Abram did as well. The two central midfielders in front, Will Riley, Mateusz Klich, did a good job. It was a clean sheet for Atlanta United. Second of the season. That's a big statement. That's something this team has to do better, which is defend better. And it's funny that they defended better, again, against a team that has struggled offensively. Keep that in mind. But they did this by changing their formation into more of an offensive formation, at least in terms of where players are, in terms of numbers. It doesn't always work out this way. But a 4-3-3 by default should be able to get more players forward than the 3-5-2/5-3-2 that Atlanta had been playing lately. Didn't really work out that way, though. It was interesting how that kind of worked. DC did not press all that high. They had a little bit of a high line. Atlanta couldn't exploit that. But the movement off the ball was the most glaring issue for me for Atlanta United. Maybe some of that is down to the change from the 3-5-2, 5-3-2 to the 4-3-3, and players couldn't see where the run should be. But instead of trying things and being aggressive and maybe making some mistakes and maybe ending up in some spots that you wouldn't want to get into, or two guys making the same run, those sorts of things, it felt like everyone went the other way and was more tentative and more conservative and didn't want to get caught out of position. So everything became a little static. So many times in the first half, the team would win the ball, look up, get to midfield, thereabouts, get into the middle third, and cycle it to the side because there wasn't anywhere to go. And then work it around to the other side. And then do the same back the other way because nothing opened up. The movement off the ball was as bad as I can remember it. And I'm not sure why it's happening outside of the formation change, but still, you see this happen, especially with teams in a situation where you're trying to make something happen, where you're trying to be aggressive to change the fortunes of your season. And usually the good mistakes that happen in this situation is when players are trying to do too much. They're making too many runs off the ball. They're maybe making a run that wouldn't be the primary run. Somebody else should have made that run. They're in a different spot. You get two people in the same spot. It happens. You can play with that. You can deal with that. What can't happen is what we saw in DC, where it felt like a team that was just stuck. You're not going to win games that way. And this team is past the point of being able to draw their way back into the playoff picture. They have to go out and pick up 3 points. And they're going to have to do it on the road. And that's a tough thing to do in this league historically. But this team has to do it. And DC was a very winnable game on the road. Toronto is a very winnable game on the road. I would assume we'll continue to see the 4-3-3. You do get Matt Edwards back training for the full week, barring any injuries that happen later this week after today. He was training today. He did not train the full week last week. Maybe that precipitated some of the lineup change. Maybe it was an effort to kind of shake things up. But this is where you are if you're Ronnie Dyla right now. Like, you can shake up with a formation. You can shake up with a lineup change and start somebody as opposed to somebody else, or sit somebody, and you can do that. But it's down to the players, and it's down to the guys on the field to show something, to show urgency, desperation, something. And it wasn't there in DC. I think helping maybe that be there in Toronto is you get Bartosz Schlisz back into the team. He was suspended due to yellow card accumulation for the DC match. That will help. I think he shows it. He demonstrates it. Hopefully that's contagious a little bit. Brad Guzan was injured in that match. There was a collision late in the first half that had us a little worried that he wasn't going to come back out for the second half. Jaden Hibbert warmed up pretty extensively, but Brad came back out and he finished the game with a broken cheekbone, we found out. And he had surgery to fix that today. He is not expected to miss the game this weekend because Brad Guzan is a maniac, and never count that guy out. When you got a 44-year-old in the Club World Cup semifinals, do not start counting out Brad Guzan and pointing at his age, because he's one of the league leaders in saves this year. He's kept Atlanta United in a whole lot of games this year that they maybe shouldn't have been in. And he's continuing to do great work. He just is. And it's amazing to see. I don't know what kind of mask he's going to have on. I don't know if he turns into Batman or Phantom of the Opera. I have no idea. But Brad Guzan is expected to play this weekend because he's Brad Guzan. Toronto is a little bit different than you might remember Toronto FC. This team has been going through it lately. This team is in all kinds of silly season rumors at the moment. All kinds of stuff happening with Toronto. One thing that's not a rumor that has happened is they have cut ties with Lorenzo Insigne and Federico Bernardeschi. The two high-paid Italians are gone. Buyouts to get them off the roster and to move on, which may be a little bit of a surprise. Maybe not when you've seen what having them there has actually created. But when you look at the team right now and you look at their loss against NYC last week, Sean Johnson in goal, still very solid at this stage. A back line of Petretta, Rosted, Long, and Thompson. Midfield of Coelho, Longstaff, Dominguez, wingers, Spicer, Corbino. There's not a lot in this team right now that you look at, especially when they had already been struggling, and you take the two most talented players out of the team. You know, their striker right now is on loan from Midtjylland in Denmark, Ola Brynhildsen. This is not a team that you should go in and be afraid of if you're Atlanta United. Talent, just straight up talent on the field. And I know that became a dirty word according to some people that we can't talk about it, but it's real facts. You compare these two teams in terms of talent and who has better players, and Atlanta United has better players. The reason why talent became something that, you know, we don't want to harp on right now is because players are not performing at the level of talent that we think that they have. And I don't think the expectations coming into the year were wrong in terms of how much talent this team has. I don't. Maybe there was an overestimation of where Miguel Almiron is at this stage of his career based on, you know, his legend, maybe based on two seasons ago at Newcastle. Okay. That's valid. And, you know, that's something you have to adjust to and deal with. I still think he can be better than he's been. Lotte Lott can be better than he's been. They can produce more. Sabo Lobjanidze can produce more. He talked about that today a little bit to the media. You know, I asked him about trying things and taking chances and how that can be contagious through a team. He agreed with what I was saying. He said that's something that he tries to do. He's somebody who looks for 1v1 situations. You know, it's, I talked about it after training with Madison Cruz as we were chatting about everything. I think if we're going to make a basketball analogy here, how many times do you see when somebody's hot? You know, if you're playing NBA Jam, they're on fire. Okay. They're feeling it, right? It starts to become contagious. They start to try things. Trae Young from the logo, for example. Doesn't always come off. But you start to try things and you give your team confidence. You project confidence. When players don't go for 1v1s, when players play backwards or safe all the time, it's not always about backwards to be safe. Sometimes backwards can be the right play, but then it's what you do after that. And that part wasn't happening because the movement wasn't happening. You need players to project confidence, project I'm going to take risks in a good way here. Project aggressiveness. This team's not projecting right now. And it's something that has to change. And it's not coming from Ronnie Dyla, because I think he's been extremely clear in saying, play, be brave, make brave decisions with the ball, make brave decisions with your passes, take chances, take risks, make mistakes. That's fine. Don't make the same mistakes over and over again. Learn from the mistakes. But you can make mistakes here. And when you say that to a group of players, you're telling them, go play. Go dribble that guy. Go make that pass that might be tough to fit through. Go try that. Go take that shot from distance when you get an open look because you've got the right foot or the left foot to hit it. I think Ronnie Dyla has been extremely clear during his time here in his messages publicly, which the players read. And I'm sure it's the same thing behind the scenes in the locker room. Play. Be brave. Dare to play. These are things that he said multiple times. We did not see that at all last weekend. You have to see that this weekend. You have to in Toronto because you have to build some momentum coming back home for a midweek match next week and then a weekend home match. You have an opportunity for a very big week when it comes to the points in the standings. You do. It's real. Two home games and a winnable game on the road. This team has not shown the ability to go pick up 9 points. They have the talent to. The schedule lines up for it. Can they go and do it? We'll all find out together, won't we? That's going to happen on Saturday night in Toronto. Pregame coverage will start at 6:30 with Abe Gordon and Madison Cruz. Kickoff will be at 7:40 from BMO Field. One more little bit of news on the Atlanta United front. Well, it's not news yet. It's rumored anyway. Maybe it turns into news. Maybe it doesn't. Edwin Mosquera has been linked with a move to Colombia. He's been linked with a move to Millonarios, one of the top clubs in Colombia. Can't say it'd be a shock. It's being reported by reputable journalists. Cesar Luis Merlo has not had that. It's a name you might know by this stage of silly season rumors over the years here in Atlanta. But people who are very reputable have been reporting this. It could be a move that would be a loan with an option to buy. I don't think he has a whole lot of time left on his contract, so that might become a moot point. It's a situation where Mosquera hasn't been able to stay healthy enough long enough to break in and be a locked-in starter on the wing. There are guys ahead of him in Miguel Almiron and in Saba Lobjanidze. There's a young player behind him in Luke Brennan who you got to find out what you have, and he's got to play. He needs to be that guy off the bench. Mosquera is kind of stuck in a spot where he's not going to advance in it. So it makes a lot of sense for him to go somewhere where he's going to play more. And it makes a lot of sense for Atlanta United to free up that spot. Again, Luke Brennan needs those minutes to see what he's going to be, or you need to go out and get another winger and make those changes. Could be a very busy, silly season. This is the first rumor on an outgoing. We'll see what happens with Edwin Mosquera and Millonarios. But coming up next on Atlanta Soccer Tonight, it's the 3-4-3. Three local stories, four headlines, three things that make me smile about this game that I love so much. Coming up next on 92.9 The Game and the Odyssey app.
What kind of programs does this school have? How are the test scores? How many kids do a classroom? Homes.com knows these are all things you ask when you're home shopping as a parent. That's why each listing on Homes.com includes extensive reports on local schools, including photos, parent reviews, test scores, student-teacher ratio, school rankings, and more. The information is from multiple trusted sources and curated by Homes.com's dedicated in-house research team. It's all so you can make the right decision for your family. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
Every week on the Moth Podcast, we share stories that are funny, strange, heartbreaking, and above all, true.
I myself have been married for 56 years. Unfortunately, to four different women.
It turns out the people I was looking for all my life is what you people would call nerds.
Follow and listen to The Moth on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
It's time to wrap up tonight's show with the 3-4-3.
3-4-3.
Three local stories, four headlines from around the world, and three things that made you smile about the game.
Atlanta Soccer Tonight is on Sports Radio 92.9, The Game.
Welcome back. It's Atlanta Soccer Tonight, live on 92.9, The Game, and the Odyssey app. I'm Jason Longshore, and y'all who've been listening to this show over the years, that's still freaks me out that it's been years of Atlanta Soccer Tonight, but it has, and y'all know how the show ends by now. It's the 3-4-3 brought to you by Ford. Visit your local Ford dealer. Three local stories, four headlines, three things that make me smile about the game that I love so much. Let's start on the local side. Numero uno, Atlanta United 2. They are finally back in Kennesaw for two matches this week. Finally. And it's not going to be moved. They're actually going to play. The field looked great last time I saw it when PSG was training up there. Tomorrow night, they host Cincinnati. Our pregame coverage starts on the SDH Network at 7 o'clock. Kickoff just after 7:30. You can listen at soccerdownhere.net or on the Mixler app. Same times for Sunday night as well, but you'll be able to listen to that match against Columbus right here on 92.9 The Game and the Odyssey app, as Madison Cruz will be on play-by-play. I'll be on color. John Nelson will be alongside as we cover Atlanta United 2 and the Columbus Crew 2. You'll get to hear about the next generation of Atlanta United players, probably potentially some academy players getting on the field in those two matches. Players like Rodrigo Neri, who we just posted on SDH, a box-to-box with him, getting to know him a little bit better. That's on Instagram.com/soccerdownhere. Lots of cool stuff going on with Atlanta United, too. I'm just glad they're back in Kennesaw for a couple of games, and you get to see them up close. Hopefully, we will see you in Kennesaw at Fifth Third Stadium as well. Number two, Atlanta United's Unified team. They're in action on Saturday morning in Toronto. You'll be able to watch the stream on atlutd.com/live. First time an MLS Unified team has traveled internationally for a match. First time any Unified team has broadcast internationally as well. Very, very cool things. It's always great to be able to cover the Atlanta United Unified team, and they will be in action on Saturday morning. You can watch 9:30 is your start time for that. If you can't stay up, if you can't get up early enough to watch that one live, you can watch that one on demand at Atlanta United's YouTube channel. Number three on the local side, Potros FC. They won the UPSL Georgia Premier Division over the weekend, defeating UMA FC from LaGrange 1-0 in the final in Marietta. They now enter the national tournament. That journey will start on Saturday night at Marietta High School as they host Asheville FC in the first round of the bracket. 7 o'clock is your kickoff time for that one. Let's get into the headlines from around the world. Number one, the Club World Cup. It is into its final week of action. Chelsea booked their spot in the final with a 2-0 win over Fluminense. Closer match than the scoreline might indicate today. Penalty was called off by VAR that could have leveled the match in the first half after Chelsea took the lead. Fluminense had opportunities, but they didn't convert. I think they can be pretty proud of the way that they played. João Pedro was brilliant for Chelsea. First start for the club, second appearance. Both goals in the match. He didn't celebrate against his boyhood club in Fluminense. Good win for Chelsea, even though Enzo Maresca got caught in the pregame press conference trying to say that Chelsea's played more games in the last year than the South American teams in this competition. And Brazilian reporters were like, no, we've played 70. That's more than you. He didn't have anything to say. He gets another game, and it's going to be in the final, and it's going to be against the winner of PSG and Real Madrid tomorrow. MetLife Stadium, 3 o'clock is your kickoff time. Kylian Mbappe versus his old team for the first time ever. There's still a lawsuit between Kylian Mbappe and PSG. I don't know if that adds to this, although he did drop some of the aspects of said lawsuit, but they're still haggling over salary and bonuses that Kylian feels like he's owed, and the club feels like they don't owe him. So, interesting. Another element to this match is PSG will be missing Lucas Hernandez and Willian Pacho for the rest of the tournament after their red cards against Bayern and Atlanta earned two game suspensions. Dean Huijsen, the red card for him in Real Madrid's match against Borussia Dortmund, one game suspension. They're not all the same foul, so they don't have to be the same punishment. I feel like the Hernandez one maybe is a little bit harsher because I don't think there was any intent in his arm catching a Bayern player in the face. The challenge from Pacho was much more riskier and dangerous, in my opinion, where it was studs up into the shin and then raked down. I'm okay with that one being a two-game suspension. On the Madrid side, Gonzalo Garcia has been absolutely brilliant for Real Madrid in this tournament. 4 goals, 1 assist in 5 games. He'd only played 53 minutes in La Liga last season. He did score 25 goals for the second team, but this is his breakout. Where's he going to play when everybody's healthy? Kylian Mbappe hasn't started in the tournament. He's been sick for a large portion of it. I don't know, but Gonzalo Garcia's basically staking his claim to, you're going to play me somewhere. I'm going to play because I'm going to score goals. One more game after tomorrow in the Club World Cup. Maybe a larger crowd in that when it gets into the top 10. But two of the 10 largest crowds in the tournament were at Mercedes-Benz Stadium. The two matches involving PSG in the knockout rounds. Interesting. I don't think it's all on PSG. I do think the PSG-Bayern game was an interesting crowd split. More PSG fans in that one than there were in the first game against Miami. It's an interesting subplot to this, that PSG spending their time in Atlanta and I think making a lot of friends in Atlanta, does that help their fan base here? Potentially. I think a lot of people appreciated their football as well. This was a really fun team to watch. And I think there were a lot of people who really just wanted to see a great match. And PSG and Bayern, as we talked about on our Atlanta Soccer Tonight post-game show, myself and Madison Cruz, that first 45 was about as good as you'll ever see. The highest level of soccer that we've maybe ever had in the city was that good. World class. Great match. And then you had all the drama in the second half. Everything in this match, amazing. PSG's been a fun team to watch, but can they get past Madrid? We'll find out tomorrow. Number two on the headlines. It is a vital match for England in the Women's Euros tomorrow against the Netherlands. England lost 2-1 to France in the opener. A loss to the Netherlands could eliminate them. The Dutch, they won the 2017 tournament under now England manager Serena Wiegman. England won the Euros in 2022 last time out. Are they going to get knocked out? They're the first defending champions to lose their opener. They would be the first defending champions to get eliminated in the group stage. Alessia Russo, she said, look, England has to play without fear. Going back to what we talked about with Atlanta United, right? Fear of making mistakes. You can't play that way. That's what England is saying going into this game. It won't be easy. You're facing one of the best strikers in the world in Vivian Medema. She scored her 100th goal for the Dutch in their 3-0 win over Wales in their opener. Number three on the headlines, Gabriel Heinze. Remember him? Manager for Atlanta United in 2021 for some of the season, not all that long into the season. He has now joined Mikel Arteta's coaching staff at Arsenal as an assistant. They played together at PSG. Arteta has often talked about Heinze's influence on him at that time, Maurizio Pochettino's influence on him at that time, two of the Argentines at PSG when Arteta was there. Arsenal had an opening. Carlos Cuesta had been one of the assistants for Arteta. He left the club to become the manager at Parma. He's only 29 years old, by the way, one of the youngest managers in the world. But Gabriel Heinze, people in England are starting to do their research, and they're starting to find some of the things that happened when he was here in Atlanta, some of the rumor and innuendo. I don't know how much was actually proven, by the way, about like the water thing that got twisted all out of whack. I think it wasn't a situation where Heinze was telling players they could never drink water in the training session. I think he was trying to not have the breaks in the session be as frequent. He wanted it to feel more like a normal match. That got misconstrued and twisted and who knows what. There was a lot of talk about Gabriel Heinze's time in Atlanta on a lot of different fronts. He's going to be the assistant at Arsenal. He's not going to be making these big decisions. Does he play the bad cop role for Mikel Arteta? Maybe. I don't know. It's going to be fascinating. Is he the guy that Arteta lets go out there and argue with referees and argue with the fourth official? Maybe. We'll see. We'll see where this goes. But Gabriel Heinze, after his time at Newell's a couple of years ago, he is now in the Premier League as an assistant manager at Arsenal. It's going to be a fun watch. Number four in the headlines, Lyon in France. We talked about it a little bit earlier. Their trial to appeal their relegation starts tomorrow in France. It has been moved up trying to get this thing done. Reports last week indicated that the club needed to pay 100 million euro before Thursday to keep their spot and then have another 100 million euro committed to help fund the season ahead. One reason why this is being moved up is if Lyon is relegated, reportedly, they will give up their Europa League spot. Crystal Palace will then get that spot. There won't be any issues with the court of arbitration for sport. Right now, Crystal Palace and Lyon are basically on hold in the Europa League. The reason why? Multi-club ownership rules. Even though Eagle Football Group is selling their 43% share in Palace to New York Jets owner Woody Johnson, even though they say that they have no decision-making abilities at Palace anyway, John Textor says, I'm just there. He recently stepped down as president at Lyon because he has ruffled everybody's feathers in France. Michelle Kang became the new president of the club. She's investing heavily on the women's side of the club that she controls, adding U.S. women's national team players Corbin Albert and Lily Johannes ahead of the upcoming season. Textor and Eagle Football Group, they have other teams. They've not made some friends in Belgium where they tried to change a club's name and people got very upset about that. They walked that back. They have not made friends in Brazil. They didn't make friends with Renato Paiva, the manager at Botafogo, who upset PSG in the Club World Cup and then got fired when they got knocked out of the tournament. Reports in Brazil of John Textor wanting the team to be more attack-minded, questioning lineup decisions, formation decisions. Paiva wasn't happy about it. Textor ends up firing him. Now he's hired David Ancelotti. Yes, Carlos' son, former assistant at Real Madrid. We'll see how that one goes. Botafogo also still owes Atlanta United for the Thiago Almada transfer. We've not heard of that being resolved at this stage. Rumors are ramping up on Benfica's interest on Thiago Almada with a 40 million euro price tag. Maybe that's how Atlanta United gets their money. I don't know. Botafogo made money in the Club World Cup. I don't know. We'll see. Because if they don't pay it, according to the FIFA tribunal who ruled against them, they're going to have transfer bans of bringing in players. John Textor is just like a walking source of content for anybody who talks soccer. I'm sure there will be more ridiculousness from John Textor before the week is through, especially with a trial going on in France. John Textor does not make me smile about the game often. Here's three things that actually do. Number one, Fabio, the goalkeeper for Fluminense, 44 years old. You would never guess if you didn't know who he was and you didn't know his story, you would see him play. You'd never guess he's 44 years old. Carried Fluminense to this stage in the Club World Cup to the semifinal. He started his career in 1997. At that time, none of the starters for Chelsea on the field today had even been born yet when this guy started his professional career. That's amazing. Fabio's still killing. I don't know how much longer he's going to play. He's got more shutouts than anybody in the history of the game. Number two on things that make me smile, Ricky Pooch got back on the training pitch with the LA Galaxy today after his ACL injury suffered in last year's Western Conference final. Heartbreaking scenes when that happened, and it ends up happening, and he assists on the winning goal. Can't continue in the match, can't even come out for the celebrations afterwards, has to be carried out. He knew what was wrong. Everybody knew what was wrong. The Galaxy ended up going on and winning the final anyway. They've been a mess without him, but seeing his posts on social media, talking about how good it was to be back, really cool to see for a guy that I just love the way he plays the game. So it's a good day when Ricky Pooch is back on a soccer pitch. And it's a really good day for the LA Galaxy and their fans. Just a good day for anybody who loves attacking creative players. Number three on things that make me smile, Yandel Guevara, a name you don't know yet, but maybe you will someday. He has been part of the Georgia Impact Youth Club. He has signed with a club in Mexico called Pro Training Camp FC. They play in the third division in Mexico. They provide opportunities to Mexican-Americans and also players in the central parts of Mexico that don't often get professional opportunities. Gives them a chance to play at a pro level. Gives them a chance to get seen by other clubs in Mexico's top two divisions. A lot of teams have third division affiliates as well, so they see players in that division. They like them. They bring them into their club. Big congrats to Yandel Guevara. Big congrats to Georgia Impact. Very cool, different kind of pathway for a potential pro move for Yandel Guevara at a higher level. He's going to move into a pro situation, but it's kind of a development situation, a development club. We'll see if he can continue to make a rise and represent Georgia Impact in Mexico. Thanks for hanging out with me tonight. Atlanta United on the field on Saturday night. 7:40 is your kickoff. 6:30 is your pregame start time here on 92.9 The Game and the Odyssey app. Atlanta United at Toronto FC. And then two home games next week. We'll be talking about all of that on AST next Tuesday night at 10 o'clock. Adios, everybody.
You don't just live in your home. You live in your neighborhood as well. So when you're shopping for a home, you want to know as much about the area around it as possible. Luckily, Homes.com has got you covered. Each listing features a comprehensive neighborhood guide from local experts. Everything you'd ever want to know about a neighborhood, including the number of homes for sale, transportation, local amenities, cultural attractions, unique qualities, and even things like median lot size and a noise score. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
Every week on the Moth Podcast, we share stories that are funny, strange, heartbreaking, and above all, true.
I myself have been married for 56 years. Unfortunately, to four different women.
It turns out the people I was looking for all my life is what you people would call nerds.
Follow and listen to The Moth on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.